Hi there. Welcome to the Agency Toolkit Podcast, a podcast where we discuss stories, strategies, and techniques to help you build a successful and profitable digital marketing agency. Our episodes contain inspiring conversations with CEOs and entrepreneurs and leave you with actionable tips, ideas, and strategies you can implement into your business today. We are happy to have you with us. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and get inspired.
Hey, Julia here. If you'd like to grow your agency with a new free traffic source, we've put together a free resource for you called the Agency Traffic Blueprint, which outlines how you can acquire free organic traffic for your agency's website using Powered by Marketing. You can get that at getrubyrobin.com/blueprint or check the description of this episode for the link.
Hello, and thank you for tuning into another episode of the Agency Toolkit. I'm your host, Julia McLaughlin. My guest today is Rick Mility, who has worked for dozens of iconic global brands like Corona, Neutrogena, DreamWorks, and more. From the first agency he opened in the 1990s to the anti-agency he runs today, Rick's vision was to create a firm that would serve clients first and be home to a team rooted in supportive company culture. Today, we're going to be discussing Rick's journey of building InnoVision and what he's learned along the way. So thanks so much for joining us today, Rick.
It's my pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So to get started, let's dive into a couple questions so our listeners can get to know you a little bit. So what would you say really motivates or inspires you as an entrepreneur?
I think, you know, that's a journey that changes throughout your life. I think initially when you're in your 20s, you're motivated by success and adventure. And as you grow older, you start to really understand what the true values that are important in life are. If we talk about today, I would say what motivates me most is people's happiness. And I think that's what I root success to is, you know, people always ask me how I define success. And I think it's really your own personal happiness that defines success. I don't know that you can chase a monetary success because there is no end to that. I think if you can be happy and you're happy doing what you do and you're surrounded by yourself with people that you love being around and you choose to be around people that make you happy, that support you and keep you positive, I think then you've achieved success.
I love that. Yeah, I think you definitely, you know, you have to have your why at the end of the day, what's going to, you know, fuel you through those hard times as an entrepreneur. And if, you know, your goal is just monetary, it's not going to be enough to sustain you when times get tough because it's a guarantee. Exactly.
Yeah, you'll never be happy. I know a lot of wealthy people that are miserable. And, you know, I know a lot of people that have nothing and are extremely happy. I view those people as much more successful in my opinion.
Yeah, it's interesting. So how did you get into digital marketing?
Well, you know, as the era was progressing at first, there was, I think everyone had a little bit of, you know, maybe a little intrepidation about the tool itself. There was a lot going on with bots and incredible, you know, results and stats that didn't seem logical to most people that worked in advertising their entire life.
Yes.
And you also had to see, you know, what was the adaption going to look like, you know, and I was fortunate enough to, at my former agency, be in a meeting with Sprint back in the early 90s, mid 90s, actually. And they were talking about the long-term vision for cellular usage. And I remember sitting in a room with a lot of executives and it was very phenomenal to everyone at that time to think that everyone would have their own phone number and their own phone. It didn't seem, everyone kept asking, well, why would we want that? And it was a very interesting conversation. And they thought our vision is that everyone will have their own phone and everyone will be reachable through their own phone, not only, you know, to make phone calls, but through messaging and through advertising and so forth. So that vision, I heard that vision in the early 90s, and it was very interesting to me. And I've always loved futuristic things. So when the digital era came to be, we didn't dive right in head first. We kind of took a back seat for a while. I tend to have a very ready, aim, fire strategy in my life. I don't like to jump into things without knowing where I'm jumping into.
Right.
So we sat and watched. And as we saw things, we realized where people were maybe making mistakes and where people were, we learned from everybody else's adventures, you know, and then we got into it but we did it by studying it first. And we knew that if we didn't adapt, we would become a dinosaur in this industry. And our name in itself is derived from innovation and visionary.
Yeah.
So, you know, if we're not innovating, we're not being true to our own brand.
Yeah, exactly. So interesting. Yeah. And I recently had a guest on who was talking about how AI is, you know, the future of marketing as well. And talking about how they're already starting to develop advertising campaigns, like online advertising campaigns that will be customized based on the weather. So for his client, that was related. So, you know, if it was a sunny day, users would see one ad. And if it was a rainy day, they would see a different ad. And it's just so fascinating to see where the future of marketing is headed.
100%. I love that. I love that because that, what you just, the example you decided is something that I learned a long time ago, even in the 80s, which we've kind of termed as frame of mind marketing, right? Because everything influences the way you feel every moment of every day. You feel different in the morning than you do at night. You feel different on a sunny day than you do on a cloudy day. And we've always tried to gear even before digital, we always tried to gear our media buys to that frame of mind that people have throughout a day. A classic example is when I worked with Kendall Jackson Wines, which is now just Jackson Vineyards. But back when we were working together, it was Kendall Jackson. And we noticed that their former agency was buying a lot of ads in the morning. And one of the first things we thought to ourselves was, well, who's thinking about wine in the morning? You know, people are thinking about sending their kids to school, getting to the office. What do I have to do today? Their frame of mind is not about wine. Mm-hmm. So we immediately shifted, you know, to a late night strategy, more evening drive, you know, when people are driving home thinking, I need a glass of wine, you know, and you can just see the difference in the results. And so that frame of mind, what you're talking about right now, to have the technological ability to instantly change your advertising delivery mechanism to an adaptive kind of strategy based on weather, time of day, circumstances, political environment, and economic environment by the moment would be phenomenal.
Yeah, it's so fascinating. It's awesome. So yeah, tell us about your story about starting InnoVision. You know, what was your deciding factor to really, you know, take the plunge and start the agency, and, you know, what that was like in the early days?
Well, I started my first agency when I was 30, and that agency was acquired by Eisen, Johns & Laws in the 90s. And it was a fairly significant acquisition because Eisenman at the time was the largest agency, advertising agency on the West Coast. They had 400 employees.
And
we're managing a lot of the brands that you mentioned that I worked with at the beginning of this: Neutrogena, Pennzoil, Corona, Domino's, massive accounts. And I was primarily focused on the entertainment industry, being a local agency in Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. And my clients were very interested in that because we dealt with Universal City Walk, Warner Records, the Academy of Motion Pictures Arts and Sciences. So we had a lot of connections in the entertainment industry. And they wanted to, at that time, there wasn't a real merger between entertainment and corporate advertising. Of course, now it's everywhere. But back in the 90s, it was just getting traction. So they acquired my agency for that purpose. And then as I worked on that, I got involved in the casino, in a casino account in the 90s, which was the Rio Casino in Las Vegas. And I was the point person for their relaunch as far as the creativity and the management of that, even though I was at that time, I think I was the senior vice president of the agency. And so I got very interested in the casino business. And then as Eisenman got acquired, and then it was eventually sold. I got interested. I went and you know, started working as a VP in the casino industry for a casino here in San Diego, Valley View Casino. And because I wanted to learn the operations of that business, because when you're marketing casinos, casino people, casino executives are they keep their trade secrets and their trade knowledge very close to the vest. They don't even share with their advertising agency. I mean, they don't really tell them the inner workings of the casino. So I knew the only way I could learn that was to go work within a casino. I did that for a tribe here, a Native American tribe, an American tribe here, the San Pasqual Band of Mission Indians. And I fell in love with the tribe. I fell in love with the people, just truly amazing, genuine people who I still work with today. And when we started working together with them in the early 2000s, they were just kicking off the casino. It was, a very highly competitive casino market. San Diego actually has the most casinos per capita after Las Vegas, as far as like on a county level.
Wow. So okay.
It was highly competitive. And so Harrah's was here already, and they were literally 3 miles away from Harrah's. And here's this little casino kind of trying to get started. And I just fell in love with the concept of being able to help a group of people really evolve economically as the San Pasqual Band of Mission Indians. And so I fell in love with that. And I worked with them for 8 years, and the casino is enormously successful. And I was their VP of marketing. But you know, when you have an agency background, that you have that itch constantly to be in the agency world. So yeah. I actually approached the board of directors of the casino and the tribe that runs the casino. And I said, I have this inkling. I want to go back into the agency business, and but I don't want to leave you guys. You know, I don't. So if you tell me you don't want me to leave, I won't leave. But here's what I can do. I'll make you guys my flagship client, and mm-hmm. I'm going to go open an agency if you guys are okay with that. And they were incredibly supportive and just genuinely kind about the whole, they even, you know, helped me, you know, do it. And they were just incredibly supportive of me opening Innovision. And
very cool.
So I opened Innovision with the desire to create a very different kind of advertising agency, which is why we call it an anti-agency. And we actually trademarked that phrase, the anti-agency, because it's not about being anti-advertising. A lot of people are like, what does that mean? It's more about the being anti the way of always doing things, right? A lot of agencies, this is the way we do it. This is the way we've always done it.
Yeah.
And that is an expression that just drives me nuts. So the anti-agency was born out of, let's do everything differently. Let's be open to new ideas, innovation. Mm-hmm. Let's be visionary, very much like you were talking about AI and advertising, digital advertising. Let's embrace every possible new idea we can, and let's do it by creating a culture that is people-centric, based on kindness, compassion, an open environment. Our agency is all glass. It's very transparent. It's all collaborative. I was interviewing an applicant. We're in a hiring period right now, and I was interviewing an applicant yesterday. And I think that the most fascinating part of what we do is that we are so transparent, and I'm so proud of our culture here. And I think that's something that they always ask me, and I'm very proud. I remember telling this applicant that I can't remember last time there was a spat in our agency between two people.
Amazing. That's very cool.
And I say that with all 100% honesty. I'm not BSing. I mean, that's the truth. I can't remember last time I had to get between two people and say, you guys need to pick it up. It just doesn't happen here because the culture is just so phenomenal.
Yeah. Interesting. So yeah, I'd love to learn a little bit more about your culture. You know, how do you, really help build up your team members and create loyal employees at the end of the day?
Well, for one, you know, we take good care of them. You know, we give them a tremendous platform to grow. We have a policy that we're very good at adhering to, which is we don't hire over anyone's head. that we only promote up. So if there's a need for a director, a need for a supervisor, a need for a vice president, it's going to come from our group of people. It's not going to come from an outside external person coming in and making someone who's invested years of their life here feel like, wow, this person just comes in off the street and now they're my boss.
Yeah, that's smart.
That's a tremendous way to create resentment. Yeah. Another thing we do is we just have a great culture in the sense that we have a lot of really fun activities. Every year we rent the beach out and we have a big beach party. Our HR director's wonderful at creating games and activities where people win things, and we celebrate everyone's successes here as a group. We provide breakfast and lunch for everyone here every day.
That's so interesting.
We have a beautiful kitchen and a beautiful building, dining room that they can come in. Wow. And I love walking in the morning, seeing everyone eating breakfast together and talking, collaborating and bonding. It's a lot about, every Tuesday we have an all team members meeting. Mm-hmm. It's mandatory. Everyone stops what they're doing and we all get in one room. And I talk about something that I don't know a lot of businesses talk about, which is fundamentals. And it's a strategy that I developed by being in love with baseball and remembering that the number one thing that we do as baseball players is we practice our fundamentals every day. And they're the things that we learned when we were kids, but yet we practice them every day. And I realized that businesses don't do that. They don't have a set of fundamentals that they practice. And what I mean by fundamentals is kindness, compassion, responsibility, respect, camaraderie, all these tools that are fundamentals in business and really in life.
Yep.
That people don't take the time to say, I need to be more compassionate, and so I'm going to practice that. I need to be more respectful, so I'm going to practice that. I need to be more likable, so I'm going to find a way to be more likable. And we talk about that every Tuesday. And we talk
That's
about
so interesting.
Different parts of our lives and what our brand is as a company and what our brands are as humans. Mm-hmm. And how we can improve every day as people and as a company. And I believe that has really affected a lot of people's lives, not just in the business environment, but I hear my team members, and they share it openly, because as I talk about these things, my favorite part of the meeting is going around the room and listening to everyone else's anecdotes about these things. And every week I will tell you that one of them says, I am practicing what I've learned here in my personal life, and my relationships outside of this office have gotten better.
Yeah,
and because you think about advertising and marketing, it's all relationship building.
Yep.
So if we can master the art of relationship, it's going to translate into our marketing and our advertising.
Yeah, that's so cool. That's very unique. And I really love that. It sounds like a really, really interesting, cool culture that you guys have built.
It really is.
Yeah, that's awesome. So what would you say has been the biggest overall challenge that you've had to overcome as you've been growing InnoVision?
Right now, I think it's, we get a lot of applications. We get about 100 or 200 resumes a day here to work here. But finding people that buy into what I just spoke about, it's not an easy thing to do. It's not an easy thing to walk into a culture like ours and not feel overwhelmed by the nature of it, by the openness of it, the honesty of it.
Yeah.
And not all people can handle it. And you have to be someone who understands self-improvement, who understands emotional intelligence, and understands that it's never about one person, it's only about the team. And a lot of people can't do that. And that's probably the biggest. So we do have a struggle finding the needle in the haystack, but we are very good at finding them.
Interesting. So is there anything that you look for that would be, a green flag to really investigate that person to see if they would be a good fit? Like one thing that you really look for right out the gate?
what I just described to you, I usually describe, because I help once we're interviewing, I'm always in every interview, because to me, I'm responsible for this team, and I'm ultimately responsible for the chemistry of this team. Mm-hmm. And every time you add a new person into the group, it's a new chemical that's going to change the chemistry.
That's a good way of putting it. Yeah, mm-hmm. It makes sense.
And so when I explain what I just explained to you and your listeners about the culture here and how it works, I look to see their reaction. I look in their eyes. I look at their facial expression.
See if they get excited about it.
Yeah, if they become enthusiastic about it, it's kind of a green flag. If they clam up a little bit or get reluctant about it, I think it's too much for them, or they're not interested in that. They're only interested in their own journey, which is fine, but just not, it's not good for here.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's really interesting. Very cool. Mm-hmm. So how do you, how do you grow the agency? You know, how are you bringing more leads into the agency? And, I don't even know if you're interested in still continuing to grow. Maybe this is something that, in the past, as you were growing the agency, you can speak more to. But yeah, just any basically growth tips that you would have that you would like to share, I think would be really beneficial.
Well, I will tell you that if you stop growing, you die. So never interested in not growing, because we're perpetually growing, not only as humans, as a brand, but as the size of our business. I have zero interest in stopping where we are.
Yes.
I would not mind as we grow this agency becoming 300, 400 people. And I've told my team here, I go, we're still going to have our group meetings, and maybe it's going to take a whole day, and that's fine. But it's critical to our culture. And maybe we've committed subsets. I've kind of worked out a new org chart concept, which is more, rather than a tiered org chart, it's satellites.
And interesting.
The sun concept is our brand, and the planets of groups of people that are different, we have multiple divisions and multiple groups here, are their own planets. And there is no level, higher level than any. You're not at a higher level than anyone. We're all part of this universe of a company.
Right.
And we're all satellites, and we all center around the same ideas. And so there's growth within each satellite, as opposed to that trying to grow up, we grow out. And so
that's really cool.
Working up a ladder, they're working within their own satellite and growing their satellites. And so it's worked out really well for us. And, so I would grow. I would not say we want to stop growing. I wouldn't care if we became 500 people. It's fine with me. As long as I'm providing opportunity for growth for people, which mm-hmm. is ultimately my job. I perceive my job as making the people within this organization successful. That's my job. So I have to keep growing to allow that to happen. Because if it's not growth, they have nowhere to grow into.
Yeah, so, it makes so much sense. It's really interesting.
So we don't have any salespeople here. We don't have any outbound marketing. It's all referral.
It's strictly referral. Wow, that's incredible. Referral. Okay. Mm-hmm.
And that's the only way to, and that's what works, because your best salespeople are going to be your satisfied customers.
Absolutely, yes. So how do you ensure that you have extremely satisfied customers who are going to bring in those referrals to you at the end of the day?
It's this team. It's the culture again, because everyone's buying into what we do here and who we are here as a brand. Mm-hmm. And they believe in the core fundamentals that I've just described to you.
Yep.
And those translate to everything they do for our clients. So one of the words we use for ourselves is detail obsessed. And we take that detail obsession to every level in this company. I love when people come over here and they're like, has anyone ever used your bathroom before? And I'm like, yeah, we just are detail obsessed. So the bathroom is always spotless. I mean, I'm talking about there are no spots on our faucets in each bathroom. The kitchen feeds dozens of people every day. And you go in there right now and it's spotless. There's not a crumb on a counter.
Yeah.
There's not a chair that's not put away properly. It looks like it's never been used.
Wow, that's incredible.
We we are respectful and we're detail oriented. Why does that matter? Because it translates into the work we do. So if you can have that mindset and you're detail obsessed consistently as part of your brand, that will translate into the work we do for our clients. So our work will be detailed. It'll be creative. It'll be buttoned up. It'll be organized. It'll be effective. It'll be new and fresh. And all that translates to that.
Very cool. That's awesome. It's so true. You know, when you have a skill, it has to carry across different areas of your life. It's not enough to just say that you're detail-oriented at work, because if you're not detail-oriented at home, it's not authentic, and things are going to fall through the cracks. So when you can really commit to something and carry it across all areas of your life, I think that's so powerful.
Well, yesterday was Tuesday, and one of the team members, I'll give you a couple of examples. One team member said that she made plans with a friend and she sent them all meeting requests because she wanted all her friends to show up. So she got in all their calendars, and that was their plans they made to go out for the night. Was through a calendar request. And she called her friends and said, sorry, I'm sending you all a calendar request. And all her friends said, like, that's awesome. Like, I need that in my calendar. That's fantastic. Or one of the other people said that they go home now and they check their kitchen and make sure that it's spotless. And they tell their family to make sure that it's spotless. So it's translating. You're absolutely correct. You can't be to call yourself a detailed person if you're not detailed all the way through the day. You either are detail oriented or you are not detail oriented. I always tell my team, it's like no different. You're either pregnant or you're not pregnant. There's no in between. So it's the exact same situation. You have to be, you either are or you aren't. There's no middle.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I love that. So true. So we're getting ready to wrap up here shortly, but where do you see InnoVision in 5 years' time?
We're continually growing. We keep adding new clients. We have a very horizontal client base. I don't like to put all my eggs in any one category or industry. So we have clients all over the map, both figuratively and figuratively and literally. We have clients all over the United States, and in every category. We're going to continue to grow horizontally that way. I'd like to open an East Coast office. I think probably within the next 5 years is one of the things we'll be doing, because we tend to have a lot of business on the East Coast and in the Southern, Southeast, and even the Northeast now, as well as, you know, potentially somewhere where we can have our own data center, like Phoenix or something like that, where there's good places for data storage and things like that.
Nice.
We're very interested in technology. So you know, we'll continue to grow probably geographically. Right now, it's really about, we have a core management team, training them to be ready to go out and for lack of better words, you know, settling other offices and to mirror this culture, to mirror this strategy, to mirror this brand. I won't do it until I'm 100% confident we would replicate what we've done here. Otherwise, it's not a good brand.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's very exciting. That's definitely lots of exciting things to look forward to.
Yeah.
Do you have any, you know, final thoughts or words of wisdom you'd like to share before we move on to the Fast Five?
Well, I you know, I'm not quite 100% sure who the audience is. So there's, you know, different levels of advice that I give to different people at different levels of their stages of their career or their lives. But
our audience are other agency owners.
Other agencies? Yep. I would say, you know, stop worrying about your bottom line, think more top line. Focus on the culture, focus on the people, find people that are going to be equally loyal to you as you are to them. Mm-hmm. And create a fantastic environment that is built on happiness first, and get people to buy into that, and it will translate to the success of your business.
I love that. It's great advice. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, we're going to move on to the Fast Five now. So I have 5 rapid fire questions for you. So what's a book you've read that's made an impact on you?
This is probably going to blow your mind a little bit, because it's not a business book. It's Everything I Need to Learn, I Learned in Kindergarten by Robert Fulghum.
Okay.
And it's where I derive all those a lot of the fundamentals from. And those are the fundamentals. I love that book because he understood, these are the fundamentals that you've learned in kindergarten. Why aren't you practicing them in your life, in your business.
So true.
And that is a book that I believe has helped me make the juxtaposition to taking fundamentals from that book and in life, translating them to the business world and making them business fundamentals.
Very cool. I love that recommendation. And what does your morning routine look like?
We try at 2 every day. My wife and I try to wake up early. We take about a 5-mile walk every day in the morning, just so we can connect on that level, just in a peaceful environment.
Yep.
And we just talk. And then a few times a week, I try to get some weightlifting in to keep, health to me is the most important thing. Staying young as we all get older is very important. If you plan on taking your career into, the later years of your life. So being healthy is very, very important to me. I'm very health conscious. I would say then I'm already, we have a lot of clients on the East Coast. So I'm at it at 6 in the morning with them, 7 in the morning, talking to them because it's 10 o'clock to them and they're already going.
Yeah, so exactly.
A lot of East Coast exchange. I love good coffee. I have a cup of coffee. I always have a cup of coffee with me pretty much throughout the day. But my morning routine is different every day. Some days I'm directing a commercial for a client. Some days we're in meetings and it fluctuates. It's really different every morning other than my general health routine in the morning.
Okay. And do you have any CEOs that you follow or study?
Well, unfortunately, one of my favorite CEOs has passed, and that was Steve Jobs. But I love the way Steve thought. I love what he modeled his Apple after, and his thinking along the lines of great art. He did think differently. He used Picasso's thousand nose theory at Apple. He did some really phenomenal things, and obviously, he created the most successful company in the world. And so, it's tragic that he passed the way he did, but I think he left an impact that'll be endless.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And what is your favorite online tool?
Do you mean as far as like a social media tool or like a organizational tool, or?
It can be any type of tool that you use that can make your life easier. For example, Calendly, something like that.
We use an organization system here called, now I'm blanking on the name, it's Airtable.
Okay. And
Airtable is something that we love using, and it really has helped us with our organization. And, we don't have time to talk about it now, but there's a organization in the business place. It's something that we put a lot of emphasis on because it's the only controllable, 100% controllable growth tool that every business has.
Right.
And so we put a lot of emphasis on organization.
Okay. Airtable. Interesting. Mm-hmm. And last question, what's one thing you wish you had known when you began your career?
There's probably a dozen at least, but I would say, I don't know. That's a really tough question. There's so many things. And I think probably just the importance of self-improvement. I think if I had to pin it all down to one thing, and there's a lot, I wish I knew what the digital was going to be, the way digital was going to be. I wish that I knew so many other things, but I think knowing the value of self-improvement and constant self-improvement, and then the value attaching that to the value of making other people more important than yourself. Mm-hmm. Something that's a hard concept to grasp when you're young, but it is very important.
Yeah, just constantly investing in yourself, improving on your skill sets it's so valuable. Like you said, it's going to pay you back tenfold, and you're just going to grow you're just going to keep evolving as a human being.
Well, not even so much as the skill set. It's more your own person, your own level of peace and harmony within yourself.
Okay.
That
I like that.
That's the hardest thing to improve on. Being a great person, a great person, a selfless person, a kind person, a compassionate person, an understanding person.
Yeah.
And putting other people's lives almost at a more value than your own. Mm-hmm. And people that you care about, you know, and that you want to see succeed. Yeah. That is a very difficult thing to grasp when you're young. I wish I'd known that sooner. And perhaps had I known it, I may have not even been interested in it, because I think when you're young, you're a little bit stupid. But you know, we learn through trial and error, and hopefully we all make mistakes and we only make them once.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I think it's so beneficial just learning what other entrepreneurs would have done differently earlier on. And then, you know, you can learn so much from other people.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that at the end of the day, the most important thing anyone can remember is just trying to make people around you feel good.
I love that. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for joining us today, Rick. It was a real pleasure to learn about your story and your journey. I really enjoyed learning about your really unique company culture. So thanks again.
It was my pleasure. I enjoyed this talk speaking with you as well. Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Agency Toolkit. We hope you've learned something new that you can implement into your agency today. If you liked this episode, please subscribe to our podcast, and we'll see you next time.